You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me back.
Okay, we're going. We are on section 110, subsection 5, page 164.
Yes.
Of Contributions to Philosophy of the Event by Martin Heidegger, yet again. We are going to go.
Yeah,
great. A lot of Greek in the coming subsections, but apparently you understand it all.
I have looked it up
right
prior.
Okay, go ahead.
So 110 is called The Idea, a.k.a. Look, Platonism and Idealism. A.k.a. means that that's for Greek, sorry. Does that work? Okay, yeah. Whatever. Okay, five. The interpretation of beings as beingness, the latter understood as idea, a.k.a. look, common genera, grasps the beingness of beings and thus also the being, being but not being, of beings. In beingness, being is surmised as what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in beingness. Therefore, the task is to advance along the same path, the path characterized by a grasp of presencing, and proceed beyond beingness, beyond beingness. Because this questioning asks only about beings and their beingness, however, it can never detach itself from beings and stripe up against being itself. The beyond, I believe it wasn't in the dictionary. So I'm going to guess that's beyond. The beyond can therefore be determined only as something that henceforth characterizes beingness in terms of its relation to the human being, happiness, as the good, the useful, the ground of all usefulness, thus as condition for life, for the soul, and accordingly as the very essence of the soul. Thereby the step is taken over to value, to meaning, to the ideal. The guiding question of beings as such is here already at its limit, and likewise at a place where it relapses and henceforth values beingness instead of grasping it in a more original way, and values it such that value itself is declared to be what is highest.
So I gotta parse this, huh?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I barely parsed the word. I don't know. Good luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's critical is we have this word beingness, we have this word being, and we have this word beings. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And those are represented also in the Greek, which is, so what is, read that first sentence again.
Keeping the Greek or?
No.
Okay. The interpretation of beings as beingness, the latter understood as look, common genera, grasps the beingness of beings and thus also the being, being but not being, of beings.
Okay, so the interpretation of beings as beingness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense given what we've been reading. Within this first beginning, we interpret beings, so in a sense, individual beings, right?
Mm-hmm.
As beingness. So we interpret them according to their, again, I think the good word would be essence.
Mm-hmm.
Or as he says here, their look. We've talked about how look is the sort of form or general determinant that all beings fit into. So the interpretation of beings as beingness grasps the beingness of beings, which makes sense, and thus also the being, I guess that's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so meaning, you know, beings be. And so this also grasps their being. In a sense, you could say that the way they are, their are-ness, their is-ness, their being, which is different than beingness. So I think we can think of Usha or beingness as essence and the Ive or whatever that is, a being, as existence. In beingness, being is surmised as what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in beingness. I mean, I think again, we could retranslate that and say, in essence, or, you know, in our conception of essence, existence is what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in essence. So there's a split between essence and existence, in a sense, form and matter, or the general and the individual, perhaps, or it's more that being is beingness is the format of beings, and being is the I guess we should say being is the existent of beings, or the existence of beings, the way they are, how they be. Now, how being is surmised as what is in some way what is not completely fulfilled. Well, I mean, in essence, I think that makes sense. I mean,
yeah.
If we think of existence, existence is not completely fulfilled in essence, because existence needs to be. Needs to exist. Right? Therefore, the task is to advance along the same path. Not sure what that means. The path characterized by a grasp of presencing, and proceed beyond beingness.
That's beyond beingness.
Yeah, beyond beingness.
In Greek.
So I think the task is to advance along the same path. Which I think is, you know, the task here is seeking the other beginning, but we need to go beyond beingness. Mm-hmm. And he references here his book, The Metaphysical Foundations of Western Thought, or Western Metaphysics, in the winter semester of 1937, 1938, which must have been quite a time to be in college in Germany. Because this questioning asks only about beings and their beingness, however, so this questioning, the questioning that is this task, it can never detach itself from beings and strike up against bang itself. So this question remains stuck on beings, objective beings, due to its dependence on the structure of beingness and being.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the beyond, and why do you think that means beyond? Because that's
because
just...
Because above it said beyond beingness, and it's that same first word, beyond.
Great. Okay,
and
great.
It has Usha. So
okay, great. So this is in a sense, the beyond beingness that our task is seeking.
Mm.
Can be determined only as something that henceforth characterizes beingness in terms of its relation to the human being. yeah, I mean, I guess to go beyond beingness, we would be determining or characterizing beingness as having a relation to human being. So beingness would not just be a general objective form out there in the world. We would go beyond beingness, and that would set it up as being a thing that we are thinking in relation to what it means to be human, as the, I think you said, as the good, the useful, mm-hmm. the ground of all usefulness, thus as a condition for life, for the soul, and as the very essence of the soul. Mm-hmm. I can't tell if he's urging us to,
I can't either.
to take that approach, or that is what's going on as we, that in a sense, the beyond beingness is the good and the useful and the ground for all usefulness within the first beginning. But I guess we'll keep looking. The step is taken over to value, to meaning, to the ideal. Yeah, I mean, I think he's describing pre-other beginning, right? Mm-hmm. I think he's describing what Western metaphysics has been. And as you try to go beyond beingness, you traffic in ideas like value and meaning and ideal, the ideal. Mm-hmm. The guiding question of beings, so what are beings, is here already at its limit and likewise at a place where it relapses and henceforth values beingness instead of grasping in a more original way, and values it such that value itself is declared to be what is highest. So as we accept beingness and being and that and the formula that we have placed it in, the question of what beings are has reached its limit. We, in a sense, can't know because we are too, our thinking is too conceptualized by a predetermined understanding of being and beingness, and we cannot grasp it in a more original way. And instead of grasping it, the guiding question of beings as such is here already at its limit, yeah, mm-hmm. and likewise at a place where it relapses and henceforth values beingness. So the guiding question, instead of looking into the question of what are beings, just relapses into question of what is beingness, mm-hmm. and doesn't grasp it in a more original way, and values it such that value itself, well, I think actually that it is beingness, and values beingness such that value itself is declared to be what is highest. Mm. So in valuing beingness, we start to value as mm-hmm. the highest thing. Mm-hmm. Very complicated stuff, but yeah. Kind of making sense to me. I mean, it's, again, it's just kind of a taxonomy of metaphysics and liberal thought, mm-hmm. Which I think we can understand, like liberal thought seeks value and meaning and the ideal beyond essence, considers these things the good and the soulful and the useful, accepts the objectivity, the objective constant presence of beingness, and interprets beings according to beingness and subsumes their individuality into the general form. And I think thinks of things in terms of the relation to human being, to the human being, such as how happy they make us. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's really a picture of liberal metaphysics and the way a variety of things come to be put forward as absolute values, and how valuing things and values themselves become the highest good. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
well, that,
we can keep going, but I'd like to return to that question, like, because just the question of, okay, so why wouldn't
we value
meaning
going.
And ideal? Okay, or maybe, well, I'm not sure if he answers
it. No, let's do it. I mean, this is so thick, we could spend an entire episode on this.
Yeah,
So what's your question?
The question is like, well, then what's the downside to valuing value, meaning, and ideal, or happiness, good and useful? Like, what would be the downside?
I would say he says it right here. Basically, the downside is that you fail to grasp the guiding question in a more original way. Mm-hmm. And so... Mm-hmm. If you're committed to the guiding question, actually the basic question is what are beings, and the guiding question is what is the truth of being, right?
So the guiding question is the question of being, essentially. Uh-huh. You know, and then the basic question is the question of being. And I can read like one of the, I've actually bookmarked one of the earlier times in which this was referenced. So just here it says, we therefore name this question of being the question of the being of beings, the guiding question. Mm-hmm. So I guess the being of beings, mm-hmm, is the guiding question. Mm-hmm. Its most general form was impressed on it by Aristotle. What are beings?
Mm-hmm. So what's the basic question?
And then the basic question...
What is the truth of being?
Especially since the question of who we are must remain purely and fully incorporated into the asking of the basic question, how does being essentially occur? Mm. So I've always broken it down, which might be incorrect, in the guiding question is the question of being, and the basic question, the question of being. But I mean, really... that might not be totally true. And he does have slightly different takes on it throughout the book in different ways. This is just sort of the ones that I circled. Because here, the idea of the guiding question really being the question of the being of beings is... Mm-hmm.
It's, yes.
So I think they flower. they change. Yeah, they morph.
Exactly.
But,
well, it does strike me that, so he uses this phrase, guiding question. So it seems almost like this question is the one that should guide us into and toward and into and through the other beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And that guiding question is about beings. Mm-hmm. Because it is the question of beings that he says has been... suppressed by the original metaphysic, by an emphasis on being and beingness. Mm-hmm. And so the guiding question of asking, well, but what are beings and how are beings guides us through the other beginning. And then it seems like the basic question, I seem to remember the basic question has something to do with what is the truth of being. No, however,
being.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I think... I've also heard bang thrown into the basic question, but I think the truth of being is bang. So I think it's almost like saying the same thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you approve of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, so to your question, I mean, I think it's that this emphasis on the beingness of beings this emphasis on the useful and the good and the valuable and the ideal and meaning and so on, all of which is really just, I would almost call it filigree hung on the roof of beingness, the heavens of beingness, the strata of beingness that we take as absolutely true and universal and controlling everything. All of these reactions to beingness and symptoms of our absorption into beingness and dependency, cognitive dependencies on beingness, leading us to, think about things like value and meaning and ideal as the highest forms of what we're capable of, as he says, prevents us from partaking in the guiding question. And if we can't partake in the guiding question, then we're not being guided. We're not guiding ourselves. We're not moving into the other beginning. And we're never getting to the basic question, which is the question of bang, the question of the truth of being. What is the truth of it? Essentially, we've been handed a structure, a metaphysical structure, that is highly dependent on and perpetuative of some very deep and long-running and strict determinations of what being and beingness are, and these rigorous rules of liberal determination keep us from actually getting to the essence and the truth of being and beings and bang.
Yeah. Well said.
So it keeps us locked in imagination. Yeah. It keeps us locked in worldview. It keeps us locked in metaphysical objectivity.
Yeah, it does. That's true.
I mean, so it does. I mean, should we stay on this section?
Sure, sure.
I mean, it's such a thick sauce. And I kind of feel like it might be interesting to dive back into the section with this distinction between liberal and post-liberal. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I almost feel like everything he says in here can be looked at and kind of repositioned or negated in a sense to really start to get a sense for what the post-liberal might be. I mean, even the interpretation of beings as beingness, right? And beingness understood as look, commonality, the general, right? Grasps the beingness of beings and thus also the being of beings. So if that's the liberal format, then the post-liberal format is, or the post-liberal, and again, I think you could almost say first beginning is liberal, other beginning is post-liberal, right? So the other beginning will not interpret beings as beingness, right? Will not understand beingness as idea or look or generality, or at least won't suppress beings or umbrella beings with this beingness, this look, this commonality, this genera, and will sort of, I guess, divorce beingness and beings, if that's possible. Which I guess, in a sense, the best way to think of that is post-liberality sets beings free from a predetermined understanding of what beings are. And so the relationship with beings becomes not, and here's this word again, materialistic or objective or metaphysically solidified and unquestioning, but the relationship with beings and what is going on when we are presented with or cognize or suppose beings becomes a question. And that's what philosophy becomes. That's what thinking becomes. Instead of just accepting beings and then moving them around in the world like pieces on a game board and calling that philosophy, our experience, our very minute, timely, daily introspective, retrospective experience of being in the world becomes the question of what beings are.
Yeah.
And I just kind of keep going back to this, that book, The Oaks. I mean, mm-hmm. I've talked about it so many times. It's like you've got a book that just kind of accepts what beings are. But the interesting book would ask what beings are, what oaks really are,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and present that philosophically, not mm-hmm. not like a narrative of them as if they're a character in the drama that you have, are you insisting we all listen to,
mm-hmm.
but asking what they are. And I bring up that idea of drama. That's interesting too, because you and I bash on story a lot, right? Mm-hmm. We bash on story. But I think what we're really bashing on is story that is not invested in the question of what a character is.
Mm.
But when a story is actually the unfolding of the question of what a character is, it can really be quite liberating. And I'm not sure it's even a story then in the way we think of it. I think what we don't like in story is that kind of constant presence of an objective set of characters.
Yeah.
And then their struggles become sort of,
archetypal.
Yeah, archetypal. And the only thing that's up for question is whether the characters will triumph in some way.
Yeah.
But what we are interested in is a philosophical questioning of what exactly characters are.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's an interesting thing, and it doesn't even have to be a story, but I think there's something in there about mm-hmm. about that. Now he says in beingness, being is surmised as what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in beingness. So again, we have this essence and existence dichotomy, mm-hmm. and that's very liberal. And I think that, if we're going to think about post-liberal, we're going to say that in a sense, existence is completely fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
That the dichotomy between essence and existence is not what we think it is.
Yeah. Can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
I feel like in beingness, being is surmised as what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in being. I'm not sure if I totally have it right, but I feel like it's kind of saying that there's like a hole, like something's not completed. And that last part was in beingness. and there's something about that hole that's like bothersome in beingness, but in a way isn't bothersome perhaps in the other beginning. Am I reading that? Right.
I like it. Yeah. So talk some more about it.
In beingness, being a surmise.
Let me say one thing, because I want to hear you repeat what you, or you say again what you said, because what I just had, my aha, might help.
Yeah.
Give a little even broader approach or consequence of what you're talking about. I mean, he says being is surmised as what is in some way other, what is not completely fulfilled in beingness. Mm-hmm. And because of this sense of it not being completely fulfilled, we are then kind of obligated to set out on the task. Mm-hmm. That's the therefore there.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the task, mm-hmm. what happens in everyday metaphysics, is to advance along the same path,
mm-hmm.
the path characterized by a grasp of presencing, and proceed beyond beingness. So there it is. Mm-hmm. So because being is surmised as what is not completely fulfilled in beingness,
mm-hmm.
we set out on a task to go beyond beingness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm still confused about these two sentences, and now I want to hear you say what you're saying and see if we can connect. Because I don't get why being not completely fulfilled in beingness, compels us to try to go beyond beingness.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, other than, I guess...
Then does it go up into this question of the happiness? Does it go directly into
maybe. I mean, what I was going to say is I think that phrase being is not completely fulfilled in beingness. I think the way I would translate that phrase is that being, there's more to being than beingness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means. Mm-hmm. So we have to go beyond beingness. And I'm not sure in that.
Well, see, perhaps saying that so you go beyond it, and that's how you end up at essentially the values and the happiness and meaning and ideal. Is that perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, let's see. Because this questioning asks only about beings and their beingness, however, it can never detach itself from beings and strike up against beings. The beyond, the beyond beingness, can therefore be determined only as something that henceforth characterizes beingness in terms of its relation to the human being. So I think that as we go beyond beingness, because we are only asking about beings and their beingness, we never really get to bang, which would be the truth of being, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what he's saying is, so this striving for the beyond isn't really about truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about, in a way, human beings stroking their need for everything to be about them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now go back and tell me what you said again about the whole and the...
I mean, I feel like you're reading it. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was thinking that basically, like, since being... So... what is not completely fulfilled in being... what is not completely fulfilled in beingness... is like what is, I don't know, what doesn't give us the actual answer, or what doesn't answer the question.
Right.
So what?
Right,
it, so right. What's not?
So there's a lack to being.
Yeah.
Being
exactly.
Doesn't quite give us all the beingness.
Yeah. Being doesn't give us the. Yeah. There's still a hole in being. What's not? Or being is.
Right. Right.
Doesn't fully fulfill beingness, I guess. So then you look beyond beingness.
Right, right.
And then I guess you fulfill it with these values and usefulness.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if I think that's right. I mean, so maybe if we translate again these words as essence and existence. So existence, mm-hmm. There's something to existence that is not fulfilled in essence. What does that mean? Or existence, there's something more to existence than essence. I mean, there has to be, I mean, mm-hmm. in a sense, there, mm-hmm. well, there has to be something more to existence than essence, or they would be the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's a mm-hmm. difference between them that is critical to how we relate to them, and they have to be different because they are apparently different things, essence and existence, right? So
mm-hmm.
existence is not completely fulfilled in essence. I guess mm-hmm. I just don't know what fulfilled means. What do you think that means?
I don't know. I mean, we could look at the German...
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe we should. I think that's a good idea.
think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so I would say that's a really good translation. I mean, that's a valid translation. The German is erfüllt, doesn't fulfill itself, doesn't satisfy itself, doesn't meet itself, mm-hmm. would be another way to put it. I'm not sure that really clarifies what's being said, but clearly being isn't completed by beingness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so to relate to being, we have to go beyond beingness. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And in going beyond beingness, this beyond is determined only as something that henceforth characterizes beingness in terms of its relation to the human being.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why that is.
I mean, I think because if you're going to go beyond beingness, where are you going to go? I mean, so the proposal is, well, you're not going into being, you're not going into being, you're going into whatever's beyond essence.
Right.
And what's beyond essence is...
feelings.
Yeah. I guess, is that feelings? Right. Yeah, or I mean, that's a whole other topic, is what this value, meaning, usefulness, good.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what I mean, is I think that if you're going beyond beingness, you're heading into subjective valuation. You're heading into having a reason to do that. That is, in a sense, ideological. So this is very liberal here, right?
Yeah, very.
So now you're talking about the soul, about life, about what's good, what's useful, what makes people happy, what is ideal, what should be happening. You're talking about progress. You're talking about values. You're talking about what has value, what doesn't have value. I mean, it's all these things. Useful, good, soul, value, ideal, meaning, blah, 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 are in a sense they're the liberal decorations for the room from which truth has been banished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They're the cardboard cutouts that occupy the liberal's life instead of actual truth.
Yeah, and I feel like it's all to fill the hole that beingness can't fill over being. And so instead of going back to that question, the guiding question, you're taken to those cutouts.
And this game between being and beingness and how they don't fulfill, or how being doesn't fulfill itself in beingness. And so beingness is therefore somehow inadequate, and therefore we need to set up values and meanings and ideals and talk about usefulness and the good and happiness. This is just all a big game that is played only because the questioning of the liberal asks only about beings and their beingness.
And
never strikes up against bang itself.
Or being.
Or being, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. This beyond beingness, like, I wonder where that is, what that is. What is beyond? I mean, I think beyond beingness in a liberal mind state is, I mean, think about it, I guess, in a sense, liberal values, liberal ideas, liberal meanings, liberal happiness are only possible because the liberal mind is going beyond beingness, because it is somehow convinced that being is not completed, that there's more to being than beingness. But of course, beingness...
Go ahead. Not just that there's more to being than beingness, because there's a lot more to being than beingness, just that Yeah. That it's not the full picture, I guess, or that it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just quibbled with that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it almost seems like there's, I don't know, it's like there's more to, I mean, is that lived experience? It almost seems like lived experience is what you get to when you go beyond beingness.
Yeah.
But I don't think we should therefore assume that what Heidegger's really talking about here is that beingness is the truth, and the liberal mind's urgency in going beyond beingness is a mistake, because it should be satisfied by beingness. I think he's really just talking about a set of psychological structures that allow this game to be played.
Yeah, and that take, right? yeah, and that create, that take you away from the question of being.
Too. And the question of being, exactly, being, yeah. exactly. So it's, and so there's something, well, and I mean, I think there's something about anxiety in here. I mean, the going beyond beingness in search of the useful and the good and the valuable and the ideal and the meaningful.
Yeah.
So liberalism is on this perpetual quest to go beyond beingness in order to discover being. And that quest is for all these very good things, right? Mm-hmm. It's these ideals and these values. Oh, and so, you know, again, having values and assert and assessing value becomes the highest good.
Yeah. Well, that's like one of the therapies is acceptance and commitment therapy is literally based in the idea that you choose your values and you work towards them. Mm. Like that's sort of the penultimate thing. First, you accept that you have, that there are things you don't like. And then you commit to your values. That's what it is that you accept. Mm. And then you commit to your values.
Mm. So then post-liberalism has to, I guess, throw away this mapping or this Western metaphysic of being and beingness and the assumptions about their relationship and the compulsions we have as a result of our assessment of that relationship to be seeking all these sort of machinated values,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So my question then, I think, is like, so okay, so if that's what post-liberalism needs to do, I mean, what does it mean to get rid of beingness, and what does it mean to have a view of being that isn't basically fixated on it? It's the fact that it doesn't complete itself.
Mm-hmm.
In beingness, and therefore we need to go beyond beingness. Like, what is beingness in this? Let's find I don't know what. I mean, again, the anxiety situation is so informative for us. Like, I wonder how that maps onto it, the anxiety experience. What is beingness in anxiety, for instance?
I mean, maybe like an intrusive thought or a thought, just a thought.
Maybe.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Maybe.
That's what comes to mind first.
I mean, it's like an essence.
It's like a, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I would say it almost seems like in the construct of an intrusive thought, its beingness is, in a sense, within the first beginning and within the liberal mindset, its beingness is its truth and its status
right.
As being universally valid.
Mm-hmm.
So you immediately there's no question of whether it has being, because its beingness is a given.
Yeah.
It is an intrusive thought, and it has that beingness that other intrusive thoughts have. So, for instance, again, intrusive thought after intrusive thought after intrusive thought, day in, day out, all have the look or the eidos of an intrusive thought. So they're all just kind of, and this is very therapy regime, isn't it? We just take all these thoughts and we label them intrusive thought, and that's their beingness. And then we start to talk about how to get rid of intrusive thoughts, which really we're talking about this vast array of thoughts, all of which now we just call intrusive thoughts. And so now we're just relating to the concept of intrusive thought.
Yeah.
So that's its beingness.
Yeah.
Which immediately means...
Well, and it enables more quite easily, I feel like, when you give it a beingness, because then it, there's like a structure and a like...
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And if we cling, if we stick to that phrase from last week, the individual and the changeable, then every intrusive thought, I mean, man, I feel a little like, you know, I mean, one of the most curious facets of contemporary psychology is the death of Freudianism. Freudianism just isn't really done anymore. And part of that is because psychoanalysis as a practice, to be a psychoanalyst, requires a decent number of patients who are ready to buy into the idea that, you know, you need to go get psychoanalysis multiple times a week, probably for 20 years, before you get anywhere. But by Freudianism, I don't mean the anal phase and the Oedipal phase, although inevitably you have to like deal with those things. But what I mean is the way therapy currently implants a beingness on intrusive thoughts and then starts to just kind of mechanize and reverse engineer everything through that single concept. Freudianism would say every single thought that we're calling an intrusive thought has an individual history.
That's interesting.
And thinking of them as intrusive thoughts is just, is in a sense, a delusion of the ego. So, okay, so there's that. But then, you know, but even if say the intrusive thought has beingness, and I think we can then go farther. I think we can say, well, so really within the liberal mind is the perpetual process of implanting beingness onto things. It's diagnosing, it's generalizing, it's categorizing, it's labeling, it's ensaming, it's projecting, it's does the whole identity game in an ever upward layering and simplification of what we are into manageable constructs and forms and categories. And that's all just beingness. Right, but then we have being, which apparently within this liberal schema does not fulfill itself in beingness. So, you know, as driven as liberalism is to implant beingness on everything, there's still being that isn't quite fulfilled by that process. And so we implant beingness, but yet we constantly strive to go beyond it. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, so the there's still being that isn't fulfilled by beingness.
Right.
Yeah, right, right, right. Yes, definitely.
Which, in a way, is just saying, like...
Because it can't fulfill it.
You do you. Live your experience. Your lived experience can never be captured by beingness, even though we're totally addicted to planting beingness on everything, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's always more for you to be. There's always more for you to live. You're always breaking free from the forms that you stamp onto yourself and others. But don't stop stamping those forms. Stamp those forms and then live that more. Live mm-hmm. that liberation. Live the liberation from the chains you put on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
What is that? Sorry.
Well, that's liberalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's that weird kind of paradoxical mixture that the liberal is, where they're completely addicted to so-called personal freedom, mm-hmm. liberation, getting away, being an individual, busting out, dropping out, breaking out, revolutionizing, reforming, yeah. resisting, you know, that kind of stuff. While at the same time, they're the ones planting, implanting, transplanting forms, essences, laws, and objectivities onto everything that they then need to break free from.
Mm-hmm.
So they live in this constant state of self-created tension.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the liberal.
Yeah.
And so the post-liberal says, I am free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I am liberated. And I'm not going to play the game of implanting forms on myself. Right. So I then need to go and play the secondary game of mm-hmm. discovering values and meanings and ideals and mm-hmm. all these good ideas of happiness mm-hmm. and liberation and mm-hmm. progress to break free of the you know the restraints yeah. I've put on myself and the world.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just going to drop yeah. I'm going to drop the restraints so I can drop the liberation need, liberation mm-hmm. fixation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of tension between the self-imprisoning freedom addict really shows the roots that liberalism has in medieval religion. Because
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
that's what medievalism was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what medieval consciousness was. It was a torture chamber. A self-created torture chamber of people who wanted to, you know, in a sense, be free from the devil, but they couldn't stop believing in God, which necessitates the devil.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. So, you know, it's a real trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
So post-liberalism wants to get away from all that.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't think post-liberalism necessarily just doesn't believe that the words value, meaning, ideal, usefulness, happiness have no meaning.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just don't, or even the beyond, I think the post-liberal mind doesn't only conceive of those things according to this schema of going beyond beingness
mm-hmm.
because there must be more to being than the beingness I implanted on it.
Yeah, I mean, he does put them in quotes, right? So there is this yes. idea that, like,
these are the so-called words
so-called value.
They
use. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So-called, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
And ultimately, post-liberalism is its goal is to grasp beingness in a more original way.
Mm-hmm. Although beingness or just being, does it care about beingness? Maybe.
Well, let's read this sentence. The guiding question of beings as such is here already at its limit and likewise at a place where it relapses. So it, the guiding question, relapses and henceforth values beingness. Instead of grasping it, beingness, in a more original way, and values it, beingness, such that value itself is it declared to be what is highest.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think post-liberalism wants to grasp beingness and being and beings and bang everything in a more original way.
Yeah.
I don't think post-liberalism is going to say beingness doesn't exist.
Yeah, right.
Anything can exist.
Yeah.
There's a word for it. But we want to grasp in an original way. We want to ask the guiding question of it. We want to ask what it is. We want to ask what its truth is. And we want to do the kind of analysis that Heidegger's doing here about how it's used by humans to do things. Not just, you know, the liberal mind would say beingness just is. It is the objective fact of our cognitive apparatus, of our cognitive practice. The post-liberal would say, let's question this beingness. Let's think about it in a more original way. Why? Why do we think it exists? Why has it been here for so long? How is it operating? What are our motives in having it? And again, I brought up Freud. It's almost a more psychoanalytic analysis of how this term has come to be in a sense, the coat of arms of our cultural superego.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I mean, identity and all of that comes into it as well. Like, how did that, that's beyond beingness.
Yes. And that's actually a really good point. I mean, I would almost say that identity is beingness and what we dream of as being beyond beingness. It's what we dream of as being being and beingness and what's beyond both. Because, you know, that's the paradox at the heart of identity, is that people talk about their identity all the time. My identity. And they're saying two absolutely opposing things. One is saying, my identity is this, and that's what basically plugs them into the template of a group. And at the same time, they're saying, my identity is this, and they're saying, and that's what makes me utterly unique.
Right.
And so they're living that paradox, that lie, that bad definition.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I never quite put that
right.
And they're
both called identity. So identity is so good at owning everything.
Yeah,
it's come to not only mean the opposite of itself, but it's convinced us to believe, not even believe, it's convinced us not even be able to see that it is so opposite itself, it destroys itself by being.
Yeah.
And that we depend on it and use it and claim to be it when it is in fact self-destruction.
Yeah.
We call it the truth, and it is literally self-deceit.
Yeah. And it's, like you said, it's just, it's contradictory.
Yes.
It literally can't be both. It can't be everything it claims to be, because they are opposites of each other.
That's right. And that just gets into what I've talked about, which is where what identity has done so completely is it understood long ago that this word self was its greatest enemy. So it basically took over the meaning of that word. And so now, if you can go on the internet anywhere, you can go into Psychology Today, you can go into the highest forms of academic journal, you can go into the lowest forms of chat group, and the words identity and self are used interchangeably. And that's because identity is such a parasite, such a virus, that it has taken over that word self and convinced us that there's no difference between it and self. And so we have identities now, which is really just means we are projections of a general beingness. Which means we actually have no identity. And our self has been destroyed in the process. The individual and changeable side of us, our bang.
Or being, maybe.
Well, you know, being and bang, I mean, what's the relationship? That's in the end, that's what we're gonna, in the end of the, when we finish this book finally, when we finally finish this book, the question we're going to have to ask ourselves is this. So what is being and what is bang?
Yeah, exactly.
And how are they different? And how are they the same? And how do they relate? What's their relationship?
Well, I feel like there might be something about being, as we've been talking about it today, in terms of the individual, the existence. So, but like the originary one, right? So not the being, not the beingness, the being. As existence and individual. And then I think of bang as more of the very time space specific opening and closing and moving of an event.
Yeah.
So we can't, in a way, you can sort of start to talk about being as we are in this kind of slightly, you know, abstract, almost beingness way in which we try to put words to it. But with bang, I think it's just a much harder thing to,
totally.
To like concretize or something.
So well said.
Little said. Answer to that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, I go back to, you know, I think, since this is all kind of first beginning Greek stuff, I mean, Aristotle, you know, and at least I know of Aristotle, you know, it's like being is the thing that is kind of in everything that is, right? So being is a constant. I mean, Heidegger talks about it. It's the constant presence. Being is what everything has. Being is kind of the thing you can't even really predicate of everything, because it's irrelevant to predicate it, because everything that is has being. So being is also synonymous, I think, with substance. So it's just the universal constant. It's being. And that is the God of liberalism. Bang is the God of post-liberalism, but post-liberals don't have gods. Or it's, I think that's where Heidegger comes in with the idea of the last God. Bang is the last God, but it's a God that is completely different than the first gods, the many first gods, of which there have been many, in that it just doesn't have the qualities of a god. It's a different kind of god. It's bang, and it's the passing of the last, isn't it? So in a way, bang is a god, but it's a god that's there and then gone, right? Like what which is what you just said.
Yeah,
it's the fleeting, the passing, the event, the momentous. So post-liberalism attempts to begin to experience and analyze and think about the world as consisting of events, not consisting of the God that makes the laws that make those events mere projections of divine will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're just like, especially right now in the book, just spending a lot of time thinking about how to define in a way what liberalism, what being, what these things are. Like, we haven't even read about Bang. Like, that's still, right. Like, really far away, I think. So, like, I mean, as you say that, I'm like, yeah, that sounds nice, but also sounds, like, completely gone before it even, you know, right, happened. Right, like, right. How, like, but I feel like there has to be a level of, like, well, you know, we're not there yet. We're yeah. earlier in the process. We don't yet really know what it is. It,
yeah.
Maybe there's, I mean, there's, of course, a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so. And yeah, that's right. And I think, you know, I use that guy that word God and divine will, and you know, and I'm just reminded again, like we listened to like this Orrin McIntyre episode mm-hmm. tonight, right? Mm-hmm. And Orrin is clearly a very Christian person.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ben Shapiro is a very Jewish mm-hmm. person.
Mm-hmm.
They see the world through this religious affiliation that they have. And, you know, I've talked before about, it seems like some of the most robust resistance or the robust, mm-hmm. most robust effort to get out of liberalism is being carried out by these
yeah.
figures who are very religious.
Yeah.
Charlie Kirk was very religious, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that how that's kind of confusing to us because we're not very religious.
Yeah.
And there are reasons that the very religious are leading this movement, but I do think that what I would say is, you know, I think my experience, it's not discomfort or I don't have anything against the religious. But I think ultimately the post-liberal is post-religious.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I think well, I that they're,
like yeah.
Go ahead.
I think there's just a lot of like, well, the answer is God. So that just feels like yes. in a way another value, but the highest value,
it is.
Right? They've actually found an even higher value.
It is.
But I'm just not, I don't.
It's still liberalism.
Like
it's
the
still
answer.
Liberalism.
It's still liberalism.
Yeah, it's still liberalism. I mean, yeah. You're absolutely right. It's just their God is another word
for and I think he,
liberal progress or value or ideal yeah, or meaning yeah. or whatever.
And I think he even used the word, he was like, well, the answer is virtue, right? He was like, the answer to sort of finding, having good people and balance of power and a
right.
smaller government is virtue in people, which, you know, is, did he use the word virtue? No, value, but you know, very linked to these,
yeah.
like, these sort of.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think that this podcast and these thoughts, this reading that you and I are doing and this analysis we're carrying out, in my view, is the only analysis currently occurring
mm-hmm.
on planet Earth about how to actually move beyond liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the other move beyond liberalism stuff that I hear is still talking about beingness and being and stuck in the first beginning, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we listened to Nick Land and yeah. that Russian guy, Dugin or whatever. And I mean, the whole last half of their conversation was about angels
mm-hmm.
and
Satan.
And Satanism. And, you know, I just kind of want to say, man, like we're supposed to be going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now they would say there's no such thing as forward. And in fact, Nick Land made that point in that he's like, you know, he finds it very interesting that at a time where we think we're just going to kind of be moving out of all that, we're returning to it.
Mm.
But honestly, that's a little bad faith because moving out of it is returning to it as long as you're always in it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do is conceptually finally leave it
mm-hmm.
and discover the post-liberal as truly post-liberal, mm-hmm. where liberal is synonymous with religion and is synonymous with identity. Because mm-hmm. it's actually post-identity mm-hmm. is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And to say, I am a Christian, I am a Jew, I am a Satanist, mm-hmm. I am a believer in angels, is identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have to, I mean, the phrase I use is free the self.
Yeah.
The self that is somehow prior to or outside identitarian formula mm-hmm. is what post-liberalism is attempting to discover. Mm-hmm. And it's mm-hmm. been buried and co-opted by identity since the first beginning. And that's what Heidegger's talking about.
Yeah.
Those aren't exact words he used, but that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very well said.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.